for his people, but for his own future. I'll tell the others, Hypaxia offered, though I'll miss you as my god.
I'm sure Flynn and his backup singers will be happy to protect you.
Hypaxia laughed softly, but Ethan said,
Don't tell them. Don't tell Bryce, I mean, about the other Fendir heir. She'd be distracted by it at a time when she needs to focus elsewhere.
And this task?
This task was his.
He hadn't been there to help Danica that night she'd died, but he was here now. Erd had left him alive, perhaps for this. He'd fulfill what Danica had left unfinished. He'd protect this Fendir heir, no matter what.
Just tell the others that I need to stay here for wolf stuff.
Why not tell them yourself?
He got to his feet. He might already be too late. There's no time to waste, he said to the queen and bowed to her. Thanks for everything.
Hypaxia's mouth curled upward in a sad smile. Be careful, Ethan.
You too.
He broke into a jog, pulling out his phone as he did. He sent the message to Bryce before he could second guess it.
I've got something important to do. Hypaxia will fill you in, but I wanted to say thanks for not hating my guts and having my back. You always had my back.
She replied immediately. Always will. She added a few hearts that had his own cracking. Pocketing his phone, breathing in that old ache, Ethan shifted. For the first time in weeks, he shifted, and it didn't hurt one bit. Didn't leave him feeling the ache of exile, of being packless. No, his wolf form, it had focus, a purpose. Ethan darted through the streets, running as fast as he could toward the astronomer's place to begin his long watch. Rune hadn't seen day since the night of the ball, since he'd kissed her. Since that other male had dragged her away and pain had filled her voice. But now she sat on the couch before him, quiet and wary.
Hey, Rune said.
I can't see you anymore,
she said in answer.
Rune drew up short. Why?
What happened between us on the equinox is never to happen again.
She rose. It was dangerous and reckless and utter madness.
Pippa Spetsos was in your city, attacked your temple with her Lightfall unit. Lunathian is soon to become a battlefield.
He crossed his arms, drew his focus inward to the instinctual veil of night and stars. He'd never figured out where it had come from, why his mind had automatically hidden him, but there, a neat little knot in his mind. A tug on it, and it fell away, dropping all the night and stars, letting her see all of him.
What happened to you? Are you hurt?
I'm fine. Her voice was tight. I can't jeopardize all I've sacrificed for.
And kissing me is a threat to that?
It distracts me from my purpose. It throws me from my vigilance. It will catch up to me.
She paced a few feet.
I wish I were normal, that I had met you under any other circumstances, that I had met you long ago, before I got tangled in this.
Her chest heaved, flames flickering. She lifted her head, no doubt meeting his stare through the barrier of flames.
I told you that you remind me that I am alive. I meant that, every word. But it's because of that feeling that I'll likely wind up dead, and you with me.
I don't understand the threat, he said.
Surely a kiss that's good enough to distract you isn't a bad thing. He winked, desperate for her to smile.
The male who interrupts us. He will slaughter you if he finds out. He'll make me watch.
You fear him.
Something primal stirred in Rune.
Yes, his wrath is terrible. I've seen what he does to enemies. I wouldn't wish it upon anyone.
Can't you leave him?
She laughed, harsh and hollow.
No, my fate is bound to his.
Your fate is bound to mine.
The words echoed into the darkness. Rune reached for her hand, took the flames within his own.
They parted enough for him to see her slim, fiery fingers as he stroked his thumb over them.
My mind found yours in the darkness, across an ocean. No fancy crystal required. You think that's nothing?
He glimpsed enough of her eyes to see that they were closed, her head bowed.
I can't.
But she didn't stop him when he stepped closer, when his other hand slid around her waist.
I'm going to find you,
he said against her burning hair.
I'll find you one day, I promise.
She shuddered, but melted into him, like she'd yielded any attempt at restraint.
You remind me that I'm alive, too,
he whispered. Her arms came around him. She was slender, on the taller side, but with a delicate frame and insane curves. Lush hips, full breasts that pushed against his chest with tantalizing softness. That sweet, tempting ass. She murmured against his peck.
I never told you the ending of the story from the other night.
With the witch turned monster?
It didn't end badly.
He didn't dare breathe.
As the witch fell to the earth, the prince's arrow through her heart, the forest transformed her into a monster of claws and fangs. She ripped the prince and his hounds to shreds.
Her fingers began trailing up his spine.
She remained a monster for 100 years, roaming the forest, killing all who drew near. 100 years, so long that she forgot she had once been a witch, had once possessed a home and a forest she loved.
Her breath was warm against his chest.
But one day, a warrior arrived in the forest.
He'd heard of the monster so vicious none could kill it and live. She set out to slaughter him, but when the warrior beheld her, he was not afraid.
He stared at her, and she at him, and he wept because he didn't see a thing of nightmares, but a creature of beauty. He saw her, and he was not afraid of her, and he loved her.
She released a shuddering breath.
His love transformed her back into a witch, melting away all that she'd become. They dwelled in peace in the forest for the rest of their immortal lives.
I like that ending much better,
he said, and she huffed a soft laugh. He dipped his head, kissing her neck, breathing in the subtle scent of her. His cock instantly hardened. Fuck yes, this scent, this female. A sense of rightness settled into his bones like a stone dropped in a pond. Her hand began stroking up his spine again. His balls tightened with each trailing caress. Then her mouth was on his peck, flaming lips grazing over the swirling tattoo there, the pierced nipple on his left peck. Her tongue flicked at the hoop, and his brain went haywire as he realized he was naked, or had somehow willed his clothes gone, because that was his bare skin she was touching, kissing. And she... He ran his hands over her waist again. Smooth, velvety, soft skin greeted him.
You want to do this?
He ground out. She kissed his other nipple.
Yes.
I'm not even sure we can have sex like this.
I don't see why not.
Her fingers skated down to the top of his ass, taunting. Rune's cock throbbed.
Only one way to find out, he managed to say.
Day huffed another breathy laugh and lifted her head. Rune just took her face between his hands and kissed her. She opened for him, and their tongues met, and she was as sweet as summer wine, and he needed to be in her, needed to touch and savor all of her. Rune hoisted her up, and she wrapped her legs around his middle, his cock dangerously close to where it wanted to be. But he carried her to the fainting couch, gently laying her down before climbing atop her.
Let me see your face,
he breathed, sliding a hand between her legs.
Never, she said,
and Rune didn't care, not as his fingers slicked through her soaked sex, utterly ready for him. He spread her knees and knelt between them, dragged his tongue up her center. He bucked, like his cock had a mind of its own, like it needed to be in her, or it was going to fucking erupt right there. Rune fisted himself, pumping slowly as he licked her again. Day moaned, her chest heaving, and he was rewarded with the sight of her breasts, then her arms, then her stomach and legs, and finally. She was still crafted a fire, but he could clearly see the body now. Only her head remained in those flames, which shrank until they were no more than a mask over her features. Long hair cascaded down her torso, and he ran a hand through it.
"You're beautiful," he said. "You haven't seen my face."
"I don't need to," he said. He laid a hand on her heart. "What you do, every minute of every single day. I've never met anyone like you."
"I've never met a male like you, either."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah," she said,
and he punished her for the sass in her voice by licking her again, drawing another gasp.
"Rune."
Fuck, he loved his name on her lips. He slipped a finger into her, finding her mind meltingly tight. She was going to drive him wild. She tugged on his shoulders, hauling him up.
"Please,"
she said, and he hissed as her fingers wrapped around his cock and guided him to her entrance. He halted there, poised on the brink.
"Tell me what you like," he said, kissing her neck. "Tell me how you want it."
"I like it true," she said, hands running down his face. "I want it real."
So Rune slid home, crying out at the sheer perfection of her. She groaned, arching, and Rune stilled.
"Did I hurt you?"
"No,"
she whispered, hands framing his face as he hovered above her.
"No, not at all."
The pressure of her around his cock was too much, too gloriously intense.
"I can go slow."
He couldn't, he really fucking couldn't, but for her he'd try. She laughed softly.
"Please don't."
He withdrew nearly to the tip and pushed back in with a smooth, steady thrust. He nearly leapt out of his skin at the rippling pleasure. Her hands dug into his shoulders, and Day said,
"You feel better than I even dreamed."
Rune smiled into her neck.
"You dreamed about this?"
He thrust again, sinking to the hilt, and she gasped.
"Yes," she said, as if his cock had wrung the word from her. "Every night, every time I had to."
She trailed off, but Rune claimed her mouth, kissing her as deeply as he fucked her. He didn't need her to say the rest, the part that would smash something in his chest. Rune angled her hips so he could drive deeper still, and she reached up above her to clutch at the rolled arm of the chaise.
"Rune,"
she moaned again, a warning that she was close, and echoed it with a flex of her delicate inner muscles. The squeeze had him grabbing her hands in his and slamming home. Her hips undulated in perfect rhythm with his, and nothing had ever felt so good, so real as their souls twining here.
"Come for me,"
he breathed against her mouth, as he reached between them to rub the butt of her clit in a taunting circle. Day cried out, and those inner muscles fluttered and clenched around his cock, milking him. Release barreled through him, and Rune didn't hold back as he pounded into her, wringing the pleasure from both of them. They kept moving, one orgasm rolling into the next, and he had no fucking idea how it was even possible, but he was still hard, still going, and he needed more and more and more of her. He erupted again, hauling her with him. Their breasts echoed against each other like crashing waves, and she was shaking as she held him. He lowered himself so his head rested upon her chest. Her heartbeat thundered into his ear, and even the melody of that was beautiful. Her fingers tangled in his hair.
I
know,
Rune said. It had never been like that with anyone. Sex had been good, yeah, but this? He was fairly certain his soul lay in splinters around them. He kissed the skin above her breast.
I should have asked you if you had anything to report first.
Why?
Because my mind's too fried to remember anything after this point.
Another one of those soft laughs.
All is quiet. No word on Pippa Spetsos after she eluded capture at Erd's temple.
Good. Though, I guess we could use a distraction to keep attention elsewhere.
From what?
Rune toyed with the strands of her long hair, trying to make out the texture, the color. All was pure flame.
I'm coming your way.
She stilled.
What do you mean?
We need to get into the Asteri archives.
Why?
The vital intel Sophie Renast possessed is likely in one of the rooms there.
She pushed up onto her elbows.
What?
He pulled out of her and said,
Any intel on the layout of the Crystal Palace or the archives, since you're so familiar with them? We'd appreciate it.
You're going to break into the Crystal Palace. Into the archives.
Yes.
Rune!
She grabbed his face in her hands.
Rune, do not go there. They will kill you. All of you.
Hence the need for attention to be elsewhere while we break in.
Her fingers dug into his cheeks, and her heart pounded so wildly he could hear it.
It's got to be a trap.
No one knows except people I trust. And now you.
She shot to her feet, again wholly veiled in flame.
If you're caught, I cannot help you. I won't be able to risk saving you or your sister. You're on your own.
His temper began simmering.
So you won't tell me anything useful about the layout?
Rune, I...
Again, that awful hiss of surprise and pain, that glance behind her.
To him, the male.
Rune grabbed her hand, like she could stay with him, but she began panting, wild and frantic, terrified.
Rune, they know, I...
Her voice cut out for a moment.
The dungeons!
She vanished, like she'd been snatched away. Chapter 68
We leave for the Crystal Palace tomorrow. Rune snarled at Hunt in the great room of Bryce's apartment. At dawn. Let me get this straight, the angel said with maddening calm. You've been meeting mind to mind with Agent Daybright and dating her?
Bryce sat at the dining table as she nursed a cup of coffee, which she needed desperately since Rune had burst in at 4 in the morning. Banging her, apparently. Rune growled at his sister.
Does it matter? It does.
Hunt said,
because you're suggesting that we break into the Crystal Palace, not only to get into the archives, but to save your lady love. That adds a shit ton of risk.
I'll get her myself, Rune shot back. I just need to get in with you two first.
Absolutely not, Bryce countered. I get that you want to play rescuing hero, but what you're talking about is suicide.
Would you hesitate to go in after Athalar?
He pointed to the angel.
Or you, to go after Bryce?
You've known her for a month,
Bryce protested.
You knew Athalar for barely more than that, before you offered to sell yourself into slavery for him.
Rune snapped, before they could speak.
I don't need to justify my feelings or my plans to you. I came here to tell you that I'm going with you. Once we're inside the palace, we'll go our separate ways.
See, that's the part that bugs me.
Bryce said, draining her coffee. This whole separate ways thing. We all go in, we all go out. Rune blinked, but Bryce said to the angel, Honestly, you should stay here.
Excuse me?
Hunt demanded. Rune kept silent as Bryce said,
The more of us go in, the better chance of getting noticed.
Rune and I can manage.
One? No. Two? Fuck no. Three?
Hunt grinned wickedly.
Who's going to level you up, sweetheart?
She scowled, but Hunt plowed on.
I'm going with you.
She crossed her arms. It'd be safer with two people going.
It'd be safer not to go at all, but here we are, going,
Hunt said. Rune wasn't entirely sure what to do with himself, as the angel crossed the room and knelt before Bryce, grabbing her hands.
I want a future with you. That's why I'm going. I'm going to fight for that future.
His sister's eyes softened. Hunt kissed her hands.
And to do so, we can't play by other people's rules.
Bryce nodded and faced Rune. We're done playing by Ophian's rules, or the Asteri's rules, or anyone else's. We'll fight our own way. Rune smirked.
Team, fuck you.
Bryce grinned. Hunt said,
All right, team, fuck you.
He stood and patted a hand-drawn map of the Crystal Palace on the dining table.
Fury dropped this off earlier, and now we're all wide awake, so time to get studying. We need to create a distraction to make the Asteri look elsewhere, and we need to know where we're going once we're in there.
Rune tried not to marvel at the commander mode Athalar had slipped into.
It has to be something big, he said, if it'll buy us enough time to get into the archives and find Day. She's probably in the dungeons, Hunt said.
He added, as if reading Rune's worry.
She's alive, I'm sure of it. The Hind will be dispatched to work on her. They're not going to kill her right away. Not when she's got so much valuable information.
Rune's stomach churned. He couldn't get the sound of Day's panicked voice out of his mind. His very blood roared to go to her, find her. Bryce said a shade gently.
We'll get her out, Rune.
That doesn't give us much time to plan something big, though,
Hunt said, sliding into the seat beside Bryce. Rune scratched his jaw. They didn't have time to wait weeks. Even hours might be lethal. Minutes.
Day said that Pippa is lying low, but she has to have something planned. Ophion has taken enough hits to its numbers and bases lately that they'll likely let her do whatever she wants, either as some final stand effort or to rally old and new recruits. Maybe we can prompt Pippa to do whatever she's planning a little earlier.
Bryce drummed her fingers on the table. Call Cormac. Bryce was fully awake when Cormac arrived 30 minutes later, Therian in tow. She'd called him, too. He'd started them on this bullshit. He could damn well help finish it.
Yet Therian, something was off about his scent. His eyes.
He said nothing when Bryce asked, so she dropped it. But he seemed different. She couldn't place it, but he was different. Cormac said when Rune had filled them in,
I have it on good authority, as of last night, that Pippa is planning a raid in a few weeks on the Pangeran lab, where the Asteri's engineers and scientists work. Where they made that new mech prototype. She wants their plans for it, and the scientists themselves. To build the new mech suits?
Therian asked. Cormac nodded.
And you were going to tell us this when?
Rune challenged. Cormac's eyes blazed.
I heard at midnight. I figured it could wait until morning. Besides, you lot haven't bothered to loop me in on anything since the ball, have you?
He directed this last bit at Bryce. She smiled sweetly.
I thought you were licking your wounds.
Cormac seethed.
I've been dealing with my father, finding a way to convince him to let me remain here after the humiliation of my engagement being called off.
Therian let out a whistle at that. Bryce asked, And did you?
I wouldn't be here if I hadn't,
Cormac hurled back.
He thinks I'm currently trying to woo you from Athalar.
Hunt snorted at this, earning a glare from Cormac. Bryce cut in before it could escalate to blows.
So how do we convince Pippa to make her move now? We're not exactly on good terms with her.
Therian said, What if she's not the one initiating the raid? Bryce angled her head.
You mean us?
I mean me and Cormac and whoever else we can trust. We carry out the raid, and Pippa and her cronies come running before we can steal the plans and suits they want. And where does that get us?
Hunt asked. It gets us in a lab with Pippa and Ophion, and if we time it right, a pack of dreadwolves will arrive right after they do.
Solas, Bryce said, scrubbing at her face. How are you going to get out of that?
Cormac smiled at Therian, as if sensing the direction of his thoughts.
That's the big distraction. We'll blow it all to hell.
Rune blew out a breath. That'll certainly get the Asteri's attention.
The lab's 20 miles north of the Eternal City, Cormac said. It might even draw them out to inspect the site, especially if Pippa Spetsos has been captured.
You're cool with handing over a fellow rebel?
Hunt asked the prince. I don't see any other options.
Keep the casualties to a minimum,
Hunt said to Cormac, to Therian.
We don't need their blood on our hands.
Bryce massaged her chest. They were really doing this. She got to her feet, and they all looked at her as she said,
I'll be right back,
and padded into her bedroom. She shut the door and strode to a photo on her dresser, staring at it for several long minutes. The door opened behind her, and Hunt was there.
You all right?
Bryce kept staring at the photo.
We were really happy that night, she said,
and Hunt approached to study the photo of her, Danica, Juniper, and Fury, all grinning in the White Raven nightclub, drunk and high and gorgeous.
I thought we were really happy, at least.
But when that photo was taken, Fury was still doing what she does. Juniper was quietly in love with her. And Danica? Danica had a mate, had all these secrets. And I was stupid and drunk and convinced we'd party until we were dust. And now I'm here. Her throat ached.
I feel like I have no idea who I am.
I know that's so fucking cliche, but I thought I knew who I was then.
And now.
She lifted her hands, letting them fill with starlight. What's the end goal in this? Somehow, some way, overthrowing the Asteri? What then? Rebuilding a government? An entire world? What if it triggers another war? Hunt tugged her into his arms and rested his chin atop her head.
Don't worry about that shit. We focus on the now, then deal with everything else afterward.
I thought a general always planned ahead.
I do. I am. But the first step in making those plans is finding out what the fuck Sophie knew. If it's nothing, then we reassess. But I know how it feels to wake up one day and wonder how you got so far from that carefree person you were. I mean, yeah, my life in the slums with my mom wasn't easy. But after she died, it was like I'd had some illusion ripped away from me. It's how I wound up with Shahar. I was reeling and angry, and it took me a long, long while to sort myself out. I'm still sorting it out.
She leaned her brow against his chest. Can I admit that I'm scared shitless?
Can I admit that I am too?
She laughed, squeezing him tight around the middle, breathing in his scent. I'd be slightly less scared if you were staying here, and I could go in knowing you were safe.
Likewise.
She pinched his ass. Then I guess we're stuck with each other, venturing into the lion's den.
More like a Sobek nest.
Great, really reassuring. He chuckled, the sound rumbling into her bones, warming them.
Rune talked to Declan. He's going to hack into the security cameras at the palace, turn away the cameras while we're in there. We need to give him our route through the building so he can turn them without being noticed by anyone monitoring the system. Flynn will run support for him.
What if we wind up needing to take a different hall?
He'll have backup plans, but we really need to try to stick to ours.
Nausea roiled her gut, but she said,
okay.
Hunt kissed her cheek.
Take your time, Quinlan. I'll be with the others.
Then he was gone. Bryce stared at the photo again. She pulled out her phone from her bathrobe and dialed. Unsurprisingly, Juniper's phone went to audio mail. It was 5:30 in the morning, but she knew Juniper would have picked up before.
Hey, this is Juniper Andromeda. Leave a message.
Bryce's throat closed up at her friend's lovely, cheerful voice. She took a breath as the audio mail beeped.
Hey, June, it's me.
Look, I know I fucked up, and I'm so sorry. I wanted to help, but I didn't think it through, and everything you said to me was absolutely right. I know you might not even listen to this, but I wanted you to know that I love you. I miss you so much. You've been a rock for me for so long, and I should have been that for you, but I wasn't. I love you. I always have, and always will. Bye.
She rubbed at her aching throat as she finished, then removed the photo from the frame, folded it, and slipped it inside her phone case.
Chapter 69. Rune found Cormac sitting alone in an old square dive bar, face stony as he watched the late night news show, a glossy-haired celebrity laughing her way through some interview, a shameless promo for her recent movie. What are you doing here? The Avalon Prince asked him, as Rune slid onto the stool beside him.
Flynn was notified of your location. Thought I'd see why you were up so late, considering our appointment tomorrow.
Cormac studied him sidelong, then drained his beer.
I wanted some quiet.
And you came to a dive bar in the old square for that?
Rune indicated the blasting music, the wasted patrons around them, the self-puking green liquid into the trash can by the pool table in the back. His cousin said nothing. Rune sighed.
What's wrong?
Does it matter to you?
Cormac signaled for another beer.
It matters to me when we're relying on you tomorrow.
When Day and Bryce were relying on the prince to be alert and ready.
This isn't my first big appointment.
Rune glanced at the male, the immaculate blonde hair, the unfailingly arrogant angle of his chin. Cormac caught him looking and said,
I don't know how your father never managed to do it.
Do what?
Rune leaned his forearms on the oak bar.
Break you.
The kindness in you.
He tried, Rune choked out.
My father did too, and won,
Cormac snorted, taking his fresh beer from the bartender.
I wouldn't have bothered to check on you.
Yet you expended a lot of time and risk on finding her.
The prince shrugged.
Perhaps. But deep down, I am what I've always been.
The male who would have gladly killed you and your friends.
Rune tugged on his lip ring.
You're telling me this right before we head off?
I suppose I'm telling you this to apologize.
Rune tried not to gape.
Cormac.
His cousin blankly watched the TV.
I was jealous of you, then and now, for your friends, for the fact that you have them, that you don't let your father corrupt what is best in you. But had I been forced to marry your sister?
His mouth twisted to the side.
I think, with time, she might have undone the damage my father did to my soul.
Bryce has that effect on people.
She will be a good princess, as you are a good prince.
I'm starting to get disturbed by all this niceness.
Cormac drank again.
I'm always pensive the night before an appointment.
For a glimmer, Rune could see the male his cousin might have become, might yet become. Serious, yes, but fair. Someone who understood the cost of a life. A good king.
When all this shit is done,
Rune said hoarsely, tucking even thoughts of Day aside as he settled himself more comfortably on the stool.
I want us to start over. Us. You and me.
Prince to prince. Future king to future king.
Screw the past, and screw that shit with the Star Sword. Screw our fathers.
We don't let them decide who we get to be.
Rune extended his hand.
We'll carve our own paths.
Cormac smiled almost sadly, then took Rune's hand, clasping firmly.
It'd be an honor.
The barracks were dim. No one lounged in the common area, from what Hunt could tell down the hall as he entered his room. Good. No one but the cameras to see him come and go. He'd left Quinlan sleeping and hadn't told anyone where he was going. His room was cold and soulless as he shut the door behind him, just as he'd been when he'd first met Quinlan. He'd displayed no traces of his life, put no art on the walls, done absolutely nothing to declare that this space was his. Perhaps because he'd known it truly wasn't. Hunt strode to his desk, setting his empty duffel on it. He made quick work of loading up the extra knives and guns he'd kept in here, not wanting to be noticed checking out a stock of weapons from the armory. Thank the gods Micah had never bothered with enforcing the sign-out rules. Hunt had enough here to, well, to sneak into the Crystal Palace, he supposed. He zipped the duffel, his gaze catching on the helmet on his desk. The skull painted on its front stared at him, unholy hell in its black pits for eyes, the face of the Umbra Mortis. Hunt picked up the helmet and set it on his head, the world shading into hues of red and black through the visor. He didn't let himself second guess it as he stalked out of his room and into the night. Celestina was standing at the elevator bay. Hunt drew up short. Did she know? Had someone tipped her off? The duffel of weapons burned against his hip. He reached to pull off the helmet.
Leave it,
she said, and though her words were firm, her expression was contemplative.
I've always wondered what it looked like.
Hunt lowered his hand.
Everything all right?
I'm not the one sneaking in at 5 in the morning.
Hunt shrugged.
I couldn't sleep.
The Archangel remained in front of the elevator bay, blocking his access. Hunt asked,
How are things with Ephraim?
Her wings snapped shut, a clear warning. Whether it was to keep his mouth shut about Hypaxia or something else, he didn't know. Celestina only said,
He departs tomorrow. I shall visit his keep next month if there is not a change in my situation by then.
If she hadn't gotten pregnant.
Your silence speaks volumes about your dismay, Athalar.
Power crackled in her voice.
I go to the mating bed willingly.
Hunt nodded, even as disgust and rage curled through him.
The Asteri had ordered this, done this. They'd make Celestina keep going to Ephraim until she was pregnant with the child they wanted her to bear. Another little archangel for them to mold into a monster. Would Celestina fight to keep her child free from their influence? Or would Ephraim hand the kid over to the Asteri and the secretive training centers they had for young archangels? Hunt didn't want to know. Celestina asked,
Why couldn't you sleep?
He blew out a breath through his nose.
Is it pathetic to say it's because of the prince stuff?
She offered him a pitying wince.
I thought that might come up.
Hunt tapped the side of his helmet.
I weirdly missed it. And I wanted to clear out the last of my stuff from the room before it became a public spectacle.
It was partially true. She smiled softly.
I haven't had the chance to ask, but will you be leaving us?
I honestly have no idea. Bryce and I are giving the Autumn King a few days to cool down before asking him to define my royal duties. The thought of having to act fancy and take meetings with a bunch of assholes makes me want to puke.
Another quiet laugh.
But
I love Bryce. If doing that shit is what will allow us to be together, then I'll grin and bear it.
Does she want to do such things?
Hell no, but we don't really get much say. The Autumn King forced her hand, and now we're pretty much stuck with things as they are.
Are you? The Umbra Mortis and the Starborn Princess don't seem the types to accept things as they are. You proved that with your surprise at the party.
Was there an edge to her voice, a gleam of suspicion? They'd trusted Hypaxia not to say a word of their activities to her lover, had believed the witch when she said Celestina didn't know, but the gods knew he talked when Bryce fucked the hell out of him. Mistakes happened, especially with a gorgeous set of tits involved. But he made himself shrug again.
We're trying to get a better picture of the battle ahead, before deciding where to start fighting the royal nonsense.
Her mouth quirked to one side.
Well, I hope that if you need an ally, you'll come to me.
Was that code for something? He scanned her face, but could pick up nothing beyond reserved concern.
He had to get out of here, so Hunt bowed his head. Thank you.
A prince doesn't need to bow to a governor, you know.
She walked over to the landing veranda doors, opening them for him. All right, he'd fly home. Hunt stalked into the night, that bag of weapons a millstone hanging off his shoulder. He spread his wings.
Old habits.
Indeed,
she said, and a shiver went down his spine. He didn't look back as he launched skyward. Hunt slowly sailed over the city. Dawn remained a whisper on the horizon, and only a few delivery trucks rumbled along to bakeries and coffee shops. He had the skies to himself. Hunt tugged off his helmet, tucking it into the crook of his elbow, and breathed in the open, clean breeze off the Istros. In a few hours, they'd leave for Pangaea. Therion had already reached out to Commander Sendez and arranged for transport across the ocean. By tomorrow morning, they'd reach the Eternal City. Tomorrow morning, he'd again wear this helmet and pray that he and his mate walked away alive.
Chapter 70. Therion had commanded plenty of raids for the River Queen. He'd gone in solo, led teams small and large, and usually emerged unscathed. But riding shotgun beside Prince Cormac in the open-air jeep as they approached the security checkpoint down the cypress-lined road, he had the distinct feeling that he might not get so lucky today. The imperial uniform they each wore lay heavy and smothering in the sun, but at least the hot day would disguise any glimmer of nervous sweat on them. No one had seemed to notice the change he felt with every breath. The invisible tether, now stretched tight, linking whatever remained of his heart, that cold, dead thing, to the Viper Queen in Valbara. A constant reminder of his promise, his new life. He tried not to think of it. He'd been grateful for the wonders of the depth charger's swift submersible pod as it hurtled their group across the ocean. Sendez had told him when he contacted her that the city ship was too slow to make it in time, but one of its Makos, sleek little transport pods, could do it. So they'd boarded the pod at the coast, then spent their time either planning or sleeping, keeping themselves mostly separate from the mayor who steered the ship. Cormac waved with impressive casualness to the four guards, ordinary wolves, all of them, at the gate. Therion kept his right hand within swift reach of the gun strapped to the side of his seat. "Hail the Asteri," Cormac spoke with such offhanded ease that Therion knew he'd said it 1,000 times, perhaps in similar settings.
"Hail the Asteri,"
the female guard who stepped forward said. She sniffed, marking what her eyes confirmed. A Fey male and a Mare male, both in officers' uniforms. She saluted, and Therion nodded for her to stand down. Cormac handed over their forged papers.
"We're to meet with Dr. Zealous. Have they radioed that he's ready?"
The guard scanned the clipboard in her hands. The three others with her didn't take their attention off the car, so Therion gave them a glare he usually reserved for field agents who'd royally fucked up. The wolves, however, didn't back down.
"There's no appointment on here with Zealous," the guard said.
Therion drawled,
"It wouldn't be in writing."
She studied him, and Therion smirked. "Rigelus's orders," he added. The female's throat bobbed. To question the actions of an Asteri, or to risk letting two officers in who weren't on the security roster? Cormac pulled out his phone.
"Shall I call him?"
He showed her a contact page that merely read, "Bright Hand." The wolf paled a little, but she saluted again, waving them through.
"Thank you,"
Cormac said, gunning the engine and driving through the gates before they'd finished lifting. Therion didn't dare speak to Cormac, not with the wolves so nearby. They just stared ahead at the dirt road winding through the forest, at the sprawling concrete compound that appeared around the next bend, where guards were already waving them through the barbed wire fencing. He had to keep an eye on the clock today. The spray of the water from the Mako's passage had extended the amount of time he could stay above, but a familiar itching had started an hour ago. Another fucking headache to deal with. 5 more hours until he had to truly submerge. The coast was a 2-hour drive from here, so they'd better get this shit done within 3, 2 to be safe. Therion nodded to the wolves in front of the lab and took in the enormous, low building. It hadn't been built for beauty, but for function and storage. Smokestacks billowed behind the lab, which seemed to be at least 1/2 mile long and perhaps twice as wide.
"Look at this place,"
Therion murmured, as Cormac pulled up to the steel front doors. They opened as if by invisible hands. Another guard must have pressed the security button to allow them in. Therion whispered,
"You think Pippa's going to come?
How the hell would she get in?" Cormac cut the engine and threw open his door, stepping crisply into the morning sun.
"She's already here."
Therion blinked, but followed Cormac's military precise motions as he climbed from the car. Cormac turned toward the open doors to the lab.
They're in the trees.
Declan had spent the previous day covertly planting information on rebel networks. The anti-Ophian rebels who'd destroyed the base on Ydra were making a move on this lab before Pippa and her agents could do so. She must have had Lightfall hauling ass to get here in time. Therion suppressed the urge to peer into the trees.
What about the Dreadwolves?
This place reeks of humans. Can't you smell it?
No.
Cormac stalked toward the open doors, black boots shining.
They're using human labor, carted in and out every dawn and dusk. Pippa would have timed their arrival with it, so their scents are hidden from the Dreadwolves below.
Solas. So why wait for us to arrive, then?
Cormac growled.
Because Pippa has a score to settle.
Bryce had no idea why anyone would want to live in the Eternal City. Not simply because it lay in the shadow of the Crystal Palace of the Asteri, but because it was old, dusty, worn. No skyscrapers, no neon lights, no music blasting from passing cars.
It seemed to have been trapped in time, stuck in another century, its masters unwilling to bring it forward.
As she, Hunt, and Rune lurked in the shadows of an olive grove a mile to the west of the palace, she steadied her nerves by imagining the Asteri as a bunch of cranky old people, shouting for everyone to keep the noise down, complaining that the lights were too bright and the youngsters too whippersnappery. It definitely helped, just a little. Bryce glanced at Hunt, who kept his attention on the olive grove, the skies. He'd worn his black battle suit, along with the Umbra Mortis helmet, to her shock. A warrior going back into battle.
Was this the right move? This risk, the danger they were plunging into?
Maybe they'd have been better off staying in Lunathian, keeping their heads down. Maybe she was a coward for thinking that. She flicked her attention to Rune, her brother's face tight as he monitored the olive grove as well. He'd worn his ox battle suit too, his black hair tied back in a braid that flowed down his spine, along the length of the star sword strapped there. He clutched the calm crystal in a fist, occasionally opening his fingers to study it, as if it might offer some hint about Day's welfare. He'd said he hadn't used it since that first contact with her, but he'd grabbed it before they left in case it could help locate her, if she had its twin on her. Rune shifted from foot to foot, black boots crunching on the rocky, dry earth.
Cormac should be here by now.
She knew every second since Agent Daybright had gone dark, pressed on her brother. Bryce didn't want to think about what was probably happening to the agent Rune seemed to care so much for. If they were lucky, she'd be alive. If they were luckier, there would be enough of her to salvage. Any attempts Rune had made to contact her, even going so far as to use the crystal, had been futile.
Give him a minute, Bryce said. It's a long jump.
Too far for her to make or attempt, especially with others in tow. She needed all her strength for what was to come.
You're a teleporting expert now,
Rune asked, brows high. The ring in his bottom lip glinted in the hot morning light.
Dex on standby. I don't want to throw off his calculations,
even by a minute.
Bryce opened her mouth, but Cormac appeared in the small clearing ahead. They'd studied a satellite map of the grove yesterday, and Cormac had committed the location to memory, plotting out the jumps he'd need to make to get here from the lab, and the jumps he'd need to make from this grove into the palace itself. Cormac announced,
"We're in. Therion's in the waiting room. I slipped off to the bathroom. All plans are a go. Ready, Athalar?"
Hunt, then Bryce, then Rune. That had been the order they'd settled on after an hour of arguing. Hunt drew his gun, keeping it at his thigh. That helmeted head turned to Bryce, and she could feel his gaze even through the visor.
"See you on the other side, Quinlan,"
Hunt said, taking Cormac's gloved hand. Prince to prince. She marveled at it. Then they were gone, and Bryce struggled to get down a breath.
"I feel like I can't breathe either," Rune said, noticing. "Knowing that Day's in there,
he added, and knowing that you're about to go in there too. Bryce gave him a wobbly smile, and then decided to hell with it and threw her arms around her brother, squeezing him hard.
Team fuck you, remember? We'll kick ass.
He chuckled, holding her tightly.
Team fuck you forever.
She pulled away, scanning her brother's violet-blue eyes.
We'll get her out. I promise.
Rune's golden skin paled.
Thanks for helping me, Bryce.
She nudged him with an elbow. We Starborn have each other's backs, you know. But her brother's face turned grave.
When we get home, I think we need to talk.
About what? She didn't like that serious expression, and didn't like that Cormac was taking so long. Rune's mouth tightened.
All right, since we might very well die in a few minutes.
That is so morbid.
I wanted to wait until shit had calmed down, but... You outrank the Autumn King in power.
And?
I think it's time his reign comes to an end, don't you?
He was completely serious. You want me to back you in a coup? A fey coup?
I want to back you in a fey coup. I want you as Autumn Queen.
Bryce recoiled.
I don't want to be a queen.
Let's ditch the whole reluctant royal thing, okay? You saw what the Fae did during the attack this spring, how they shut out innocents and left them to die with our father's blessing. You mean to tell me that's the best our people can do? You mean to tell me that's what we're supposed to accept as normal Fae behavior? I don't buy that for a second.
You should be king.
No.
Something else shone in his eyes, some secret she didn't know, but she could sense.
You have more power than I do. The Fae will respect that.
Maybe the Fae should rot.
Tell that to Deck, and Flynn, and my mother. Look at them and tell me that the Fae aren't worth saving.
3 out of the entire population.
Rune's face turned pleading, but then Cormac appeared, panting and covered in sweat.
Athalar's waiting. Think about it, Rune murmured as she approached Cormac. All clear? No issues. The intel was right.
They don't even have wards around the place,
Cormac reported.
Arrogant worms.
He extended a hand to Bryce.
Hurry.
Bryce grabbed the prince's hand, and with a last look at her brother, she vanished into wind and darkness, stomach whipping around and around. Cormac said over the roaring of the space between places.
He asked you to be queen, didn't he?
Bryce blinked up at him, though it was difficult with the force of the storm around them.
How did you know?
I might have caught the end of your conversation.
Bryce clung harder as the wind pressed. Cormac said,
He's right.
Spare me.
And you were right, too. When we first met, and you said the Oracle's prophecy was vague. I understand that now.
She didn't mean our union in marriage would bring prosperity to our people. She meant our union as allies. Allies in this rebellion.
The world took form at the edges of darkness.
But after today...
Cormac's words grew heavy, weary.
I think the choice about whether to lead our people forward will be up to you.
Hunt couldn't shake the tremor from his hands. Being here, in this palace, it smelled the same. Even in the hallway directly outside the archives, where he hid in an alcove, the stale odor of this place dragged claws down his temper, set his knees wobbling.
Screaming, pain blinding as they sawed off his wings slowly.
Shahar was dead, her broken body still dust-covered from Sandriel dragging it through the streets on her way in here. Pollux laughing as he pissed on Shahar's corpse in the middle of the throne room. His wings, his wings, his wings. Hunt swallowed, shutting out the memories, focusing his mind on the hall. No one was around. Bryce and Cormac appeared, and she'd hardly thanked him before he vanished, off to grab Rune before teleporting back to the lab. Sweat gleamed on the prince's face, his skin sallow. He had to be exhausted.
All right,
Hunt murmured, brushing back her hair with a gloved hand. She nodded, eyes full of worry and something else. but Hunt flicked her chin and went back to monitoring. They stood in tense silence, and then Rune was there, Cormac with him. Cormac's skin was ashen now. He disappeared immediately back to the lab.
Tell Declan we're a go, Hunt said.
Rune's shadows cloaked them from sight as he thumbed in a message on a secure phone that Declan had retrofitted against tracking. In 5 minutes, Therian would contact them on it to tell them whether or not to move.
Bryce's fingers slid into Hunt's, clutching tight. He squeezed back. He had no idea how 5 minutes passed. He was barely breathing, monitoring the hall ahead.
Bryce held his gloved hand through all of it, her jaw tense. Then Rune lifted his head.
Therian said Cormac just blew up the jeep.
Hunt nudged her with a wing.
Your turn, Quinlan.
Rune said,
remember, every minute in there risks detection. Make them count.
Thanks for the pep talk, she said, but smiled grimly up at Hunt. Light it up, Athalar. Hunt pressed a hand to her heart, his lightning a subtle flare that was sucked into the scar. As the last of it faded, Bryce teleported into the archives to find whatever truth might lie within them. Chapter 71. Bryce's breathing turned so jagged that she could barely think as she tumbled alone through the darkness. They were in the Asteres Palace, in their sacred forbidden archives, and she was in a stairwell? Bryce took steadying inhales as she surveyed the spiral staircase, crafted entirely of white quartz. First light glimmered, golden and soft, lighting the carved steps downward. At her back was a door, the other side of the one they'd watched Sophie walk through on the surveillance footage. The one labeled with the number Sophie had etched into her biceps. Bryce began to creep down the stairs, her black utility boots nearly silent against the quartz steps. She saw no one, heard no one. Her heart raced, and she could have sworn the veins of first light in the quartz throbbed with each beat, as if in answer. Bryce halted after a turn in the stairs and assessed the long hallway ahead. When it revealed no guards, she stepped into it. There were no doors. Only this hall, perhaps 70 feet long and 15 feet wide, likely 14 feet to be a multiple of 7, the holy number. Bryce scanned the hall. The only thing in it was a set of crystal pipes shooting upward into the ceiling, with plaques beneath them and small black screens beside the plaques. 7 pipes. The crystal floor glowed at her feet as she approached the nearest plaque. Hesperus. The evening star. Brows rising, Bryce strode to the next pipe and plaque. Polaris, the North Star. Plaque after plaque, pipe after pipe, Bryce read the individual names of each Asteri. Eosphorus, Octartus, Ostris. She nearly tripped at the penultimate, Sirius. The Asteri the Prince of the Pit had devoured. She knew what the last plaque would say before she reached it. Rigelus, the Bright Hand. What the hell was this place? This was what Danica had felt was important enough for Sophie Renast to risk her life for? What the Asteri had wanted to contain so badly they'd hunted Sophie down to preserve the secret? The crystal at her feet flared, and Bryce had nowhere to go, nowhere to hide, as first light, pure and iridescent, ruptured. She squeezed her eyes shut, dropping into a crouch. But nothing happened. At least, not to her. The first light faded enough that Bryce cracked open her eyes to see it shooting up 6 of the pipes. The little black screens beside each plaque flared to life, filled with readings. Only Sirius's pipe remained unlit, out of commission. She went rigid as she read the Bright Hand's screen. Rigelus power level, 65%. She whirled to the next plaque. The screen beside it said, Ostris power level, 76%.
Holy gods, Bryce whispered.
The Asteri fed on first light. The Asteri needed first light. She looked at her feet, where light flowed in veins through the crystal before funneling into the pipes, the quartz. A conduit of power, exactly like the gates in Crescent City. They'd built their entire palace out of it, to fuel and harness the first light that poured in. She'd studied Fury's rough map of the palace layout. This area was 7 levels below the throne room, where the Asteri sat on crystal thrones. Did those thrones fill them with power? In plain sight, they fueled up like batteries, sucking in this first light. Nausea constricted her throat. All the drops people had made, the second light the dead handed over, all the power of the people of Midgard, the power the people gave them. It was gobbled up by the Asteri and used against its citizens. To control them. Even the Vanir rebels who were killed fighting had their souls fed to the very beasts they were trying to overthrow. They were all just food for the Asteri, a never-ending supply of power. Bryce began shaking, the veins of light wending beneath her feet, glowing and vibrant. She traced them down as far as she could see through the clear stone, into a brilliantly shining mass, a core of first light, powering the entire palace and the monsters that ruled it. This was what Sophie had learned, what Danica had suspected. Did the Asteri even possess holy stars in their chests, or was it first light stolen from the people? First light that they mandated be given over in the drop to fuel cities and technology, and the overlords who ruled this world. Second light that was ripped from the dead, squeezing every last drop of power from the people. Cut off the first light, destroy this funnel of power, get people to stop handing over their power through the drop in those centers that funneled off their energy, stop the dead from becoming second light, and they could destroy the Asteri. Chapter 72. Athalar paced in a tight circle.
She should be back.
She's got 2 minutes, Rune growled, clenching the comm crystal so hard in his fist, it was a wonder the edges weren't permanently etched into his fingers. Hunt said,
Something happened. She should be here by now.
Rune eyed the watch on his wrist. They had to make it down to the dungeons, and if they didn't start immediately... He peered at the crystal in his hand.
Day,
he said, throwing her name out into the void. But no answer came, like every other attempt to reach her recently.
I'm going to get a head start, he murmured, pocketing the crystal. I'll cloak myself in my shadows. If I'm not back in 10 minutes, leave without me.
We all go together,
Hunt shot back, but Rune shook his head.
We'll come find you.
Rune didn't reply before he slipped down the hall, blending into the darkness, and aimed for the passageways that would take him across the palace compound, to the dungeons and the agent trapped within them. Bryce raced back to the top of the stairs, bile burning her throat. She'd been here too long, could only spare a minute or two more. She reached the door and the landing, rallying what remained of Hunt's charge to teleport back to him and Rune. But the door handle seemed to gleam. What else lay down here? What else might she uncover? If this was her only opportunity? Bryce didn't let herself doubt as she slipped into the main archives hallway. It was dim and dusty, utterly silent. Shelves crammed with books loomed around her, and Bryce scanned their titles. Nothing of interest, nothing of use. She sprinted through the library, reading titles and names of sections as fast as she could, praying that Declan had kept up and was moving the cameras away from her. She scanned the vague section titles above the stacks. Tax records, agriculture, water processing. The doors along this stretch had been named similarly to each other, not in code, but along a theme. Dawn, midnight, midday... She had no idea what any of the names meant or what lay behind the door, but one in the center snared her eye. Dusk. She slipped inside. Bryce was late. Hunt stayed put only because his secure phone had flashed with a message from Declan.
She's okay. She went into a room called Dusk. I'll keep you posted.
Of course Quinlan was doing extra research. Of course she couldn't listen to the rules and be back when she was supposed to. Then again, Dusk could have something to do with Dusk's truth. No wonder Bryce had entered. Hunt paced again. He should have gone with her, made her teleport him in, even if it would have drained her at a time when they'd all need her gifts. Rune had already been gone for 3 minutes. A lot could happen in that time.
Come on, Bryce,
Hunt murmured, and prayed to C'Thona to keep his mate safe. Cloaked in shadows, Rune raced down the halls, encountering no one, not one guard. It was too quiet. The hall opened into a wide fork. To the left lay the dungeons, to the right the stairs up to the palace proper. He went left without hesitation, down the stairs that turned from cloudy quartz to dark stone, like the life had been sucked from the rock. His skin chilled. These dungeons? Athalar had made it out, but most never did. Rune's stomach churned, and he slowed his pace, readying himself for the gauntlet ahead. Checkpoints of guards, easy enough to avoid with his shadows, locked doors, and then two halls of cells and torture chambers. Day had to be somewhere in there. Screams began leaking out. Male, thankfully, but they were wrenching, pleading, sobbing. He wished he could plug his ears. If Day was making a similar sound in such agony... Rune kept going, until Mordok stepped into his path with a feral grin. He sniffed once, that bloodhound gift no doubt feeding him a host of information, before he said,
You're a long way from cavorting with spies in the alleys of Lunathian, Prince.
Therion raced behind Cormac, a shield of water around them as the prince hurled ball after ball of fire into the chaotic, smoky lab. Chunks of rupturing machines flew toward them, smoldering, and Therion intercepted them as best he could. The doctor had led them right into the lab without a second thought. Cormac had put a bullet through the male's head a moment later, then ended the lives of the screaming scientists and engineers around him.
Are you fucking insane? Therion screamed as they ran. You said we'd limit the casualties.
Cormac ignored him. The bastard had gone rogue. Therion snarled, half debating whether to overpower the prince.
Is this any better than what Pippa Spetsos does?
Therion got his answer a second later. Gunfire crackled behind them, and rebels stormed in, right on time. Imperial Vanir reinforcements roared as they rushed in, and were drowned out by the barrage of guns. An ambush. Would it be enough to draw the Asteri's attention away? Cormac had incinerated the jeep with his fire magic moments before they'd shot the doctor. Surely that would warrant a message to the Asteri. And this shit show unfolding? Cormac skidded to a stop, Therion with him. Both of them fell silent. A familiar female, clad in black and armed with a rifle, stepped into their path. Pippa pointed the gun at Cormac.
I've been looking forward to this.
Her rifle cracked, and Cormac teleported, but too slowly. His powers were drained. Blood sprayed a moment before Cormac vanished, then appeared behind Pippa. The bullet had passed through his shoulder, and Therion launched into movement as Pippa twisted toward the prince. Therion was stopped by shaking ground, though. A glowing, electrified sword plunged into the floor in front of him. A mech suit sword. Cormac shouted to Therion,
Get out of here.
The prince faced off against Pippa as the woman fired again. Therion knew that tone, knew that look, and it was then that he understood. Cormac hadn't just gone rogue. He'd never intended to get out of here alive. The door marked Dusk had been left unlocked. Bryce supposed she had Declan to thank for the dead electronic keypad. Braziers of first light glowed in the corners of the room, dimly illuminating the space. A round table occupied the middle, 7 seats around it. Her blood chilled. A small metal machine sat in the center of the table, a projection device. But Bryce's attention snagged on the stone walls, covered in paper. Star maps, of constellations and solar systems, marked up with scribbled notations and pinned with red dots. Her mouth dried out as she approached the one nearest, a solar system she didn't recognize, with 5 planets orbiting a massive sun. One planet in the habitable zone had been pinned and labeled. Renthar, Conk, A.E., 14,000. A.E.? She didn't know that dating system, but she could guess what Conk meant. Conquered? By the Asteri? She'd never heard of a planet called Renthar. Scribbled beside it was a brief note. A bellicose aquatic people. Primordial land life. Little supply. Terminated AE 14,007.
Oh, gods,
Bryce breathed and went to the next star map. Ephraxia, Conk AE 680, Lost AE 720. She read the note beside it and her blood iced over. Denizens learned of our methods too quickly. We lost many to their unified front. Evacuated. Somewhere out in the cosmos, a planet had managed to kick out the Asteri. Map to map, Bryce read the notes, names of places that weren't known in Midgard, worlds that the Asteri had conquered, with notions about their use of First Light and how they either lost or controlled those worlds, fed on them until there was nothing left, fed on their power, like she had with the gate. Was she no better than them? The rear wall of the chamber held a map of this world. Midgard, the map read. Conk, A.E., 17,003. Whatever A.E. was, if they'd been on this planet for 15,000 years, then they'd existed in the cosmos for far, far longer than that. If they could feed off First Light, generate it somehow on each planet, could they live forever, truly immortal and undying? 6 ruled this world, but there'd originally been a 7th. How many existed beyond them? Pages of notes on Midgard had been pinned to the wall, along with drawings of creatures. Ideal world located. Indigenous life not sustainable, but conditions prime for colonization. Have contacted others to share bounties. Bryce's brow furrowed. What the hell did that mean? She peered at a drawing of a mare beside a sketch of a wolf shifter. The aquatic shifters can hold a hybrid form far more easily than those on land. She read the next page, with a drawing of a fey female. They did not see the old enemy who offered a hand through space and time. Like a fish to bait, they came, and they opened the gates to us willingly. They walked through them to Midgard at our invitation, leaving behind the world they knew. Bryce backed away from the wall, crashing into the table. The Asteri had lured them all into this world from other planets, somehow using the northern and southern rifts, or whatever way they traveled between worlds, they'd drawn them into this place, to farm them, feed off them, forever. Everything was a lie. She'd known a lot of accepted history was bullshit, but this... She twisted to the projector device in the center of the table and stretched an arm to hit the button. A 3-dimensional round map of the cosmos erupted, stars and planets and nebulas, many marked with digital notes as the papers on the walls had been. It was a digital orrery, like the metal one she'd glimpsed as a kid in the Autumn King's study, like the one in the astronomer's chamber. Was this what Danica had learned in her studies on bloodlines? That they'd all come from elsewhere, but had been lured and trapped here, and then fed on by these immortal leeches? The map of the universe rotated above her. So many worlds. Bryce reached out to touch one. The digital note immediately appeared beside it. Urganus. Children were ideal nutrition. Adults incompatible. She swallowed against the dryness in her throat. That was it. All that remained of a distant world. A note about whether its people made for good eating and what the Asteri had done to its young. Was there a home planet? Some original world the Asteri had come from, bled so dry that they'd needed to go hunting in the wilds of space. She began flicking through planets, one after another, clawing past the stars and cosmic clouds of dust. Her heart stopped at one. Hell. The ground seemed to slide away from beneath her. Hell, Lost AE, 17001. She had to sink into one of the chairs as she read the note. A dark, cold world with mighty creatures of night. They saw through our lures. Once warring factions, the royal armies of Hell united and marched against us. We were overwhelmed and abandoned their world, but they gave chase. Learned from our captured lieutenants how to slip between the cracks in realms. Bryce was dimly aware of her shaking body, her shallow breaths. They found us on Midgard in 17002, tried to convince our lured prey of what we were, and some fell to their charms. We lost a third of our meals to them. War lasted until nearly the end of 17003. They were defeated and sent back to Hell. Far too dangerous to allow them access to this world again, though they might try. They developed attachments to the Midgard colonists.
Thea,
Bryce whispered hoarsely. Adis had loved the Fae Queen, and Hell had come to help, exactly as Apollyon had said. Hell had kicked the Asteri from their own world, but tears stung her eyes. The demon princes had felt a moral obligation to chase after the Asteri so they might never prey upon another world. To spare others. Bryce began sifting through planets again. So many worlds. So many people. Their children with them. It had to be here, the Asteri's home world. She'd find it and tell the princes of Hell about it. And once they were done beating these assholes into dust here on Midgard, they'd go to that homeworld and they'd blow it the fuck up. She was sobbing through her teeth. This empire, this world, it was just one massive buffet for the six beings ruling it. Hell had tried to save them. For 15,000 years, Hell had never stopped trying to find a way back here, to free them from the Asteri. Where the fuck did you come from? She seethed. Worlds ripped past her fingertips, along with the Asteri's dispassionate notes. Most planets were not as lucky as Hell had been. They rose up. We left them in cinders. First light tasted off, terminated world. Denizens launched bombs at us that left planet and inhabitants too full of radiation to be viable food, left to rot in their waste. First Light too weak, terminated world, but kept several citizens who produced good First Light to sustain us on travels. Children proved hardy, but did not take to our travel method. These psychotic, soulless monsters.
You will not find our home world there,
a cold voice said through the intercom on the table.
Even we have forgotten where its ruins lie.
Bryce panted, only rage coursing through her as she said to Rigelus,
I am going to fucking kill you.
Chapter 73. Rigelus laughed.
I was under the impression that you were only here to access the information for which Sophie Renast and Danica Fendir died. You're going to kill me as well.
Bryce squeezed shaking hands into fists. Why? Why do any of this?
Why do you drink water and eat food? We are higher beings. We are gods. You cannot blame us if our source of nutrition is inconvenient for you. We keep you healthy and happy, and allow you to roam free on this planet. We have even let the humans live all this time, just to give you Vanir someone to rule over. In exchange, all we ask is a little of your power.
Your parasites!
What are all creatures, feeding off their resources? You should see what the inhabitants of some worlds did to their planets.
the rubbish, the pollution, the poisoned seas. Was it not fitting that we returned the favor?
You don't get to pretend that this is some savior story.
Rigelus chuckled, and the sound knocked her from her fury enough to remember Hunt and Rune. And oh gods, if Rigelus knew she was here, he'd find them.
Isn't that what you're doing?
What the fuck is that supposed to mean?
You left such a noble audio mail to your friend Juniper. Of course, once I heard it, I knew there was only one place you could be going. Here, to me, precisely as I had hoped and planned.
She shut away her questions, instead demanding, "Why do you want me here?"
To reopen the rifts.
Her blood froze. I can't.
Can't you?
The cold voice slithered through the intercom.
You are starborn, and have the horn bound to your body and power. Your ancestors wielded the horn and another fey object that allowed them to enter this world. Stolen, of course, from their original masters, our people. Our people, who built fearsome warriors in that world to be their army. All of them prototypes for the angels in this one. And all of them traitors to their creators, joining the Fae to overthrow my brothers and sisters 1,000 years before we arrived on Midgard. They slew my siblings.
Her head spun. I don't understand.
Midgard is a base. We opened the doors to other worlds to lure their citizens here. So many powerful beings, all so eager to conquer new planets, not realizing we were their conquerors. But we also opened the doors so we might conquer those other worlds as well. The Fae, Queen Thea and her 2 foolish daughters, realized that. Though too late. Her people were already here, but she and the princesses discovered where my siblings had hidden the access points in their world.
Rage rippled through his every word.
Your starborn ancestors shut the gates to stop us from invading their realm once more, and reminding them who their true masters are.
And in the process, they shut the gates to all other worlds, including those to Hell, their stalwart allies.
And so we have been trapped here, cut off from the cosmos, all that is left of our people. Though our mystics beneath this palace have long sought to find any other survivors, any planets where they might be hiding.
Bryce shook. The astronomer had been right about the host of mystics here. Why are you telling me this?
Why do you think we allowed you to live this spring? You are the key to opening the doors between worlds again. You will undo the actions of one ignorant priest.